This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's most American podcast network.
Say a few words and you lose control.
What's Pac-Man, everybody? Welcome to the Cynical Cartoons Podcast, where today I watch Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost with my guest, Casey Cosmos. Casey uses she, her pronouns. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at StopTweetingMia. Thank you for listening to Cynical Cartoons for another week. And as always, I'm your host, Mia Marchant. My pronouns are she, her. And I'm here if you need to talk.
Missing me when I'm out of sight. I'm a hex girl, and I'm gonna put a spell on you.
So, Casey, what was your Scooby-Doo? Because there's been fucking 30 incarnations of the show, and everybody has a different one.
My Scooby-Doo was definitely a pup named Scooby-Doo growing up. Which is kind of an interesting, because it was like the first one in a super long time where the entire gang was back together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also one of those crappy baby-fied versions of
Godzuki.
Older TV shows.
Baby Flintstones.
The art style of it was actually like a little bit influential for me just because of like how like, okay, so the original Scooby-Doo's art style is very just like flatline Hanna-Barbera. This person has a face with features and like wears clothes. Mm-hmm. And then the pup named Scooby-Doo had very distinct body types for most of its characters. It had like, they each all had like a little bit more distinctive personalities with like likes and dislikes, and you got to sort of explore more of their personalities. And I think as a kid who was constantly trying to relate to any cartoon character I could see, it was always nice to be like, oh, Velma likes books just like me.
Right.
And like Fred hates the neighborhood bullies just like me. So it created like a very, like, I never was into any of the other Scooby-Doo cartoons. And then I watched a pup named Scooby-Doo growing up, and that really solidified like, oh, I really like these characters, and like, I like the formula. I watched incarnations of it past that because I was very young when A Pup Named Scooby-Doo was airing, and the last one that I really, really watched was Mystery Incorporated, which is one that I still hold very dear to my heart because it's the similar thing of like, it really evolves into their personalities instead of just being that formulaic thing.
Yeah, I think that I'll definitely get into Mystery Incorporated someday. I don't think that that'll be like an episode of the podcast where I do just watch like one episode of the show and then do this, because it seems like it's sort of a slow burn. Like, people are really, really into that one and sort of the lore of the whole town and Mystery Inc.
I think the slow burn of it, too, comes from, like, having a childhood with Scooby-Doo. Mm-hmm. Like, I was invested in that show from the beginning because I grew up on Scooby-Doo cartoons. And when you came to me and you were like, you want to be on the podcast? I was like, yes. There was, like, a few cartoons floating around my head.
Totally Spies. Probably.
For me, it was Kids Next Door. Totally Spies is a good close second. But then you said, I think I want to do Scooby-Doo. I was like, hell yes. Actually, yes. I'm locked and loaded for a Scooby-Doo app because those were really influential on me. I still really enjoy a good mystery tale. I have characters in my comics that are named after Scooby-Doo characters because I can't help but indulge in that.
Right.
And again, like I was saying, Mr. Ink is a slow burn, but it is like when you have that investment in it since childhood of Scooby-Doo, it does pick up pretty quick because you're just already like, yeah, I like these characters. I like what they're doing with them. I like to see different takes.
Yeah, and when I was growing up, I would watch a lot of Boomerang. And so I had this weird thing where I would watch cartoons that were like mixed in from the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. And then I would like go over to Cartoon Network and watch other stuff. And so I didn't really like differentiate between those things. Like I would just see a Scooby-Doo cartoon come on and I wouldn't make that connection in my brain. Like this is 50 years old.
Yeah, you know? I think I definitely, personally, I could always tell when a cartoon was a little bit older, but I could never like, of course, place the actual time relativity for it.
It's sort of a generic, like anachronistic, like this is old.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, this has grain on it, so it must be from when my mom was a kid. But I asked my mom one time, I was like, did you have a pup named Scooby-Doo when you were growing up? And mama was like, what the hell are you talking about? And I was like, this cartoon that I watched, did you ever have that? And she was like, no. And I was like, hard times, huh?
Yeah.
<You'd> really advanced.
My mom has told me several times that she wasn't allowed to watch Scooby-Doo as a kid.
Wow.
Because it was demonic.
Oh, okay.
Her mom was really, really religious and like even I guess had just never seen an episode of the show and didn't know that they were all like spooky dudes in masks.
Yeah, well, that's what's interesting to me about Scooby-Doo too, is that like the moral of the story is kind of that like everything is explainable,
right? And then as time went on, that became not what it was about.
Yes, exactly. It quickly subverted the formula into being like, but actually what if monsters did exist?
And with a pup named Scooby-Doo, wasn't it guys in masks or was it like
actually?
It was
actually guys in masks.
Okay, because they were like giant cheese monsters and shit. It doesn't seem possible.
It was from what I remember of the show, it was mostly guys in masks. It was solving a lot of like neighborhood kid problems that were either caused by other neighborhood kids or caused
by red herring.
Like, never red herring. Red herring's an angel. He never did anything wrong.
He was always innocent? Because I know that was usually the joke, but he must have done something one time.
No, I do know this clearly because I have many a times revisited the Scooby-Doo Wikipedia article for red herring, hoping that there has been some developments in the character, like in a new iteration, perhaps they have like brought him back to do a crime. But
right.
His record is clean.
Oh boy, fucking red herring. So,
yeah.
Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost. This movie,
yes.
I don't even have a year for this. Early 2000s, sometime around there. Mm-hmm. Came out after
Zombie Island.
Yeah, after Zombie Island, there was sort of this revitalization for Scooby-Doo on home video. We had like mm-hmm. Witch's Ghost. We had Cyber Chase. We had, there was one more that nobody ever talks about, really.
the Martian one. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but there's ones where the Martians come
down. Yeah, you're right. That one was sort of on the tail end of that whole thing.
And yes, and Scooby and Shaggy sort of start dating a Martian pair of hippie and alien dog.
Oh, I thought you were saying that they start dating each other. And I was like, well, that makes sense after watching Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost, a movie in which they, to evade detection by the mayor of the town, they just straight up make out with each other.
Yes, they do. They do
weird.
Indeed. And the mayor passes by and says, young love. Young love, he says.
Like, how sweet. And it's like, you know, like he probably knows that it's a man and his dog. And he's like, I like it.
He's like, well, he's trying to get more tourists into the town. What better than a man and a dog in drag?
Right.
Keep
whatever this town is called weird.
keep Oakhaven weird.
That's it.
I remembered that because like I had a lot of trouble differentiating between the main villain's last name and the name of the town because they're like, it's like Ravencraft and Oakhaven. They're like syllables off from each other.
It sounds like a buddy cop duo from the 1970s. Ravencroft, Oakhaven, get in here.
But like with a spooky twist. I watch movies in the stupidest way possible, which is that I put on a movie and then I immediately pull up. I finish whatever food I have in my hands and then I immediately pull up IMDb and like trivia pages and like any Wikipedia like article or like Scoobypedia article I can find.
Did this one have anything? Because I didn't really see anything of interest on the IMDb page.
I dug and I sort of like formed my own narrative based around what it is. So to sort of like go into whatever backstory I found with it, Zombie Island, which is the immediate predecessor to this one, was a huge success. Like in terms of, we made a new Scooby-Doo movie and people liked it.
Yeah,
like,
introduced a whole new generation to the thing that hadn't been around in like 10 years.
Exactly. It was critically and financially more well received than planned. However, Warner Brothers saw this as an opportunity to put their claws sort of back into the property, whereas Zombie Island was a little bit hands off because it's like, oh, well, this is a Scooby-Doo movie that we haven't made anything in this property in years.
It's a Spider-Verse 2 situation, probably.
Yes, 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 exactly. It's the same thing where it's like, we have sort of hands off on this because we don't really have faith in it in the first place. And now for the next one, for this one, which is Ghost, they're very deep into it. Originally, the twist was not supposed to be that ghosts and witches were actually real. However, someone came along and wanted it to be more like Zombie Island and rewrote the third act of the movie to include real ghosts and witches.
That's so weird because I can't imagine this movie without that ending. That would feel so anticlimactic.
Yeah, I think the original ending was supposed to be that the town was just faking the ghost, which is funny because like Fred, Daphne, and Velma all point out within the first few minutes of the film that it's like, oh, there's a ghost, huh? Really interesting.
Right.
I bet you guys are up to it.
Right.
What I did find out that was really interesting for this movie, and not only for Zombie Island, which is something that I've like kind of had a wild tear on a little bit in the past, but could never like dig too deep in it, is that it was mostly animated and directed by a full Japanese cast of animators.
Oh, that's interesting.
And like as I watched it, I was like, I think the reason that mostly sent me on my tear onto like finding trivia about the film was like trying to figure out like what studio it was maybe outsourced to, if it was at all.
Right.
And it looks like it was outsourced to a few different studios for different shots, but it was directed by Hiroshi Aoyama. It was the director of animation. The timing director was Kunio Shimamuka.
Kunio Shimamuka.
Shimamuka. Okay, sorry.
I know of that. No, I was kidding. I don't know who that is.
I wrote very bad notes. Okay, well, you just tricked me because I really thought you knew more than me on that.
Oh, right.
Really shitty notes. You could just do that for anything, Mia. Like, you have a podcast and, like, I make videos on YouTube. So, like, I think you have, like, you have a degree where it was, like, I am in middle school right now.
Right.
So,
sure.
Iwao Takamoto was the original character designer for Scooby-Doo. So it's what is kind of interesting to me about these two new films, Zombie Island and Witch's Ghost, is not only that they are these like direct sequels to the original Scooby-Doo series that focus on like real world spirits and like and subverting the formulas of the original show,
right.
But also that they sort of like go back to their roots and have like a full like traditionally animated Japanese staff. It's really interesting that like so many Japanese people worked on this when like Scooby-Doo is seen as like such a piece of Americana.
Well, and you can really feel it when you're watching this movie, like especially in the whole third act with Ben Ravencroft's whole bringing back Sarah. Like it's very anime looking.
Yes.
And it is a really beautifully animated movie. You can really see the budget at work. It seems like they had a lot more to work with than with Witch's Ghost or with Zombie Island.
Absolutely. And that's another thing, again, that sent me on my tear to like try and figure out like who was working on this, because like there are shots like in this movie that I would consider like almost over animated. Like there are shots where like
the Hex Girl stuff or like with Ravencroft's demise.
Yes. And then there's also scenes where like Scooby and Shaggy are talking to the guy who runs the restaurant in the town, and they're sort of just like they're just moving every piece of them at every second, and I'm like, this is beautiful, but like feels like such a waste of man hours to like make Scooby like sort of like chuck his head around and lick his lips and go woo, woo, woo. It's like I can't believe that all of this would go into this.
And also for such a viscerally weird thing, like there's a whole subplot in this movie where they eat basically this entire restaurant worth of food. They eat a 50 course meal and they're just like walking around town and their stomachs are like making like sloshing noises.
Yeah.
And like, they're just so overly animated to like animate them. Like, it's so bizarre.
It's so loving, almost. Like, yes. Like, you can tell that the people working on it were like, fuck yeah, we get to draw Scooby-Doo. And right. And that's what also, like, sort of got me into it, was I was like, who are the people making this? And it turns out, like, it's just a team of really talented overseas animators who made even the, like, smaller moments of this really shine. Right. The part for me that really struck me was, like, actually the part at the beginning, there's a scene where... they have like sort of the initial mystery to sort of like reintroduce the audience back into the formula. And there's the knights in like suits of armor who like raise up axes. There's a shot where like they raise an axe like off screen that has like so much like beautiful weight and detail to it. And that was at the point where I was just like, are these movies animated well? And then I watched the rest of it, the entire tight 60 minutes of it. And I was like, yeah, this was animated super well. The effects are really well done. The character designs are nice. The movement's really fluid.
Yeah, and it is really fun. Like, this is, I would say, like, peak Scooby-Doo. And maybe that has a lot to do with when I grew up. Because I'm 25. I grew up, like I was saying, I watched a lot of it on Boomerang. But my main Scooby-Doo was... What's New Scooby-Doo, like the early 2000s one that came out after the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that early 2000s vibe to Scooby-Doo, I feel like is where those characters really live, even though I know that it's like they're entirely a product of the 60s.
I can totally see that. Their personalities in this one are very distinct, not only from like previous Scooby-Doo stuff, but also even from Zombie Island.
Right.
And they do kind of mirror their personalities in... the What's New Scooby-Doo TV show with the banger Simple Plan theme song. But they all sort of like hate being trivialized. And like there's many moments where like Fred and Velma sort of like comment on being called kids, or like they talk about being adults and they try and have like adult interests. And they
Velma's trying to fuck like a 48-year-old man.
Yeah, he's Velma's trying to get with Tim Curry.
It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, you're 20s, man. That's what it's like.
Yeah. But I think that they do a really good job of supplanting the Mystery Inc. gang into the early 2000s, because they don't really change the core aspects of these characters. They just put modern things around them.
Yes.
These characters would still make sense in the 1960s the way that they are in this movie, but they also hang out with the Hex Girls, who are like very late 90s, early 2000s vibes.
Who are eco-goths, yes. To quote them.
Eco, like Wiccan eco-goths. And the Hex Girls are fucking... like, I haven't seen this movie since I was a kid. I haven't seen Zombie Island since I was a kid either, really. And they just like stuck in my mind this entire time. That's the only thing that really for me is all that memorable about this movie.
I was a little different in that growing up, these movies were sort of like a mandatory yearly event, like a non-optional yearly event, because every Halloween Cartoon Network would show them on reruns. Like they would be like, we're showing one of these movies this night, one of these movies this night.
Right.
And I like, it wasn't that I like was specifically aiming to watch them every night. It's just that they were on. And it's not that I hated them either. It was just that they were like, this is the entertainment that's in front of me right now. So I was actually surprised by how much I remembered of this movie, but I was also surprised about how short it was. Like I got a little less surprised about how much I remembered
or something
once.
Like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like an hour passed and it was over. And like, I like still had food left in my bowl and I was like, okay, I guess I still have stuff to do. I remember the Hex Girls, and I also mostly remember Ben as well. Something about like Ben like taking the book and saying like, I'm 1/16th a witch, which I guess makes me a warlock, and like all the effects like crash around him as he says that. I don't know, it was really intense for me as a kid, and like rewatching it again, I was like, yeah, I can see how that would be effective. Like, cause it's like, it was a word that at the time I had never heard before. It was a concept I didn't know about.
So this to you as a kid spooked you out or not really? Cause I don't remember ever being scared by the show Scooby-Doo. Definitely the movies had a couple of moments that kind of spooked me out.
I don't think this one ever spooked me. I think it just was like awe-inspiring.
Right. It's very cool. There's some very cool moments in it.
It is very cool. I think what struck me about like, oh, this is why this was like kind of influential to me as a kid, was because I was watching this and I was like, oh, this movie's bitchin'. Like, you've got Ben like using the books and like all these ghost effects spiraling around him, and you've got the Hex Girls and their sort of light show, like their light and smoke and sound, and like all their songs they perform.
Right.
You've got the opening bit with the knights. Like, there's just a lot of like really well animated and like well choreographed action in this that like is just a pleasure to watch.
Well, and not to mention Billy Ray Cyrus doing all of the theme music.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Weird choice.
Billy Ray
but...
banging out the tunes. Yeah. I heard his voice on it and I was like, I know that voice. And it just like sort of popped up in my like in the IMDb trivia hole I went on. And I was like, okay, interesting choice. I wonder what the planets aligning were like for that. Because it was like, we're making a second direct-to-video Scooby-Doo movie.
Right.
Who is hot right now, but, like, not so hot that we can, like, skimp on the animation budget?
Well, and also it's a thing where it's like, were they trying to make this movie more folksy? Because this is the most punk rock Scooby-Doo has ever been, too. So, like,
yeah.
I guess they were just trying to appeal to some different markets, and they didn't want to bring in, like, Rose Falcon or something. I don't know.
It could definitely be like, all right, here's your palate cleanser at the beginning. And then we're going full spooky town right after.
Right.
We're going witches and ghosts and eco-goths singing about putting spells on people. I think I also really liked the resolution at the end as a kid, which was because Thorn is 1/16th Wiccan. She can cast a counter spell to Ben's spell and reseal the witch.
Yeah, I kind of realized when Sarah Ravencroft started doing like eco-terrorism, I was like, oh, Thorne's going to hate that. She's an eco-goth.
Yeah. Yeah,
I know somebody who can stop this.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think that's what made me think as a kid, like, oh, this is really good writing. They brought it up early and then they bring it back for the solution, which like it's not. It's really contrived and like it's brought up within the last few minutes. But as a kid, I could see like the pieces. I could see the seams as a kid, which made me feel really smart. So I think that's also why I liked this movie.
Well, and they also throw so many things in there that you're like, is that a clue? What is that? Like, at some point, somebody is like, hey, I'll get a bone for your dog. And Shaggy's like, well, Scooby's allergic to bones. I'm like, is that going to come up? What the fuck is that? Like, Scooby-Doo is allergic to bones and doesn't know he's a dog for some reason.
Yeah, there was that scene at the beginning where he's like, rock, what rock? Which I think is
several
like...
times. He's like, what's a dog? I don't even know what a dog is.
Oh, he does do it. Yeah, he does do it multiple times. I can't remember if that's also a bit in Zombie Island or not, but I feel like that was like a takeaway from that.
And oh, sure.
Potentially they were building this up like game-changing crossover where they were like, oh, it's the thing we foreshadowed in all of these films.
Right,
Scooby-Doo was
actually,
an alien the whole time.
Yeah, I was about to say a human in a dog body just cursed to live that way and has never seen a mirror. I don't know.
He's Shaggy's twin brother.
He's a human in a dog body with amnesia, short-term memory loss.
He's like, he has such bad amnesia that when they explain to him that he is supposed to be a dog and he is pretending to be a dog, he immediately forgets it.
Right.
I like this movie. I feel really, I felt kind of bad after watching it. I was like, I kind of like that.
No,
weird.
No. We do shit on this podcast that we like all the time. Like I was saying, the Hex Girls are absolutely make this movie a fantastic experience.
Yes.
Like I watch those music videos of them singing their songs about eco-goth stuff every year. All their songs are about the environment. It's mm-hmm. literally like, love the earth. It's only fair. It's one world that we must share. And I'm like, fucking go off. Save the world, Thorn.
If anyone can, it's her.
And it's weird that Tim Curry is suddenly like de facto Mystery Inc. member number, how many is there? Six? Like Tim Curry's in this whole movie and there's only the reveal that he's evil in the last like 10 minutes. Before that, they're like best buds.
You can really feel the last minute addition in his like evilness. Like I think he was always supposed to be like on the like bad side.
Right.
But like the actual, like he even has to explain that his motivations were really skewed. at the very end, because there's that scene where he's like, I needed you guys to lead me to the book because you're such good detectives.
Right.
And Daphne is like, why didn't you just outright ask us to find the book? And Velma says, because he knew that we wouldn't want to.
Right.
And I was like, that doesn't, what? I guess you wouldn't if you knew it was evil, but he just wouldn't have told you it was evil.
Right.
It's very much like the writers being like, we know you're going to find a plot hole on this, so we're going to explain it. And then create another one.
Well, and also, whether he's evil or not, all of his motivations in hating this town are so incredibly valid. Because basically the entire movie, he's like a Stephen King type. He's written a bunch of really famous horror books. And he's like the most famous person from this town. Goes back home and everybody's like, hey, bud, remember when we like murdered your aunt? Was it his aunt, Sarah Ravencroft?
Yes.
Right. So like, remember when our ancestors murdered your ancestor? He's like, yeah, you guys fucking bring it up all the time. And
he's like, yeah, it really rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, they just constantly bring it up. There's like a museum of Sarah Ravencroft's murder and they're always bragging about it. And the entire town like makes this whole fucking to-do about it. And it's like, yeah, you guys know that the Salem witch trials were where we drowned real women that weren't witches, right? Like, you know, witches weren't real. But apparently they were. Apparently the Salem witch trials were a good thing.
There's a line in this movie where Ben, the writer you're mentioning, he goes up to the mayor and says, have you found my great aunt's book yet?
Right.
And he's like, no, we haven't found any book. And Ben says, you know, that book is the key to proving that my aunt wasn't a witch.
Right.
And the mayor is like, yep. Tough luck. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you mean?
Well, I think that she is a witch. Like, I guess in the Scooby-Doo world, that just happened. And they really were witches. Like, sometimes they really caught one. And they're like, wow, I can't believe we actually got a witch. Jesus.
Yeah. And like, it's an actual thing you have to prove. And Ben says, too, like, I do this to clear my family name. And it's like, are you still being affected by this?
Well, yeah, because the entire fucking town is so obsessed. They have a yearly festival where they celebrate that time they killed a witch and, like, sell tickets to a haunted house and fucking...
And have, like, a Puritan village, which is what they straight up call it. And it's...
Yeah.
And Scooby's like, a Puritan village? And it's like, all right. All right, a little too whimsical for me.
The fact they get to the end of this movie and nothing happens to, like, the town members
bums
me out. Because they do some really awful stuff to Ben. And then I guess because he's just like a horrible, horrible person, he gets sucked into the book for eternal damnation, and everybody else just like has a fun concert and gets to eat a giant turkey.
Yeah, and fucking Scooby-Doo gets to play the bongos.
Oh my god. At the end of the movie, by the way, during the second Hex Girls concert, they invite Mystery Inc. on stage, and Mystery Inc. are like jamming with them. And I'm like, none of those instruments are plugged in. And Mystery Inc. isn't doing shit here. They're just kind of, this is for show.
These are all like plastic instruments they gave just to make them feel better. I totally agree about the town stuff, because we have that whole opening where the gang meets Ben and they're very like starstruck by this awesome writer. And he invites them back to his hometown in Massachusetts, which is conveniently not Salem, Massachusetts.
Right.
And
yeah, they're in Maine.
Yes. They're in Oak Haven. They're in Oak Haven, Massachusetts.
Right,
he specifically says Massachusetts.
Sorry, I don't know where Maine is. I thought Maine was in Massachusetts for a moment.
I don't know anything about geography.
Yeah.
I've been talking to someone who says they live in Maryland, and I thought that was like...
In England.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, that could have been anywhere. I would have no idea. I was telling her, I was like, they didn't take geography in schools. And she was like, yeah, they do. And I was like, maybe in Maryland they do.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So Ben gets to the town and he sees that it's like full of tourists, and he's very rightfully like, my ancestry is being made a mockery of for the sake of selling t-shirts. Right. My dead aunt is on a t-shirt because it's like entertaining to yuppies.
Right.
And they're just like, here, Ben, have a free one. and it's like, it's like, I would be super pissed. Yeah,
I didn't even think about that. It's just like a super like realistic, like just picture of her dead corpse.
Yeah. It's like a spookyified version of her, and it's just right. Like, isn't this great, Ben? Isn't this great? The one witch this town ever killed, it was someone related to you, and we still talk about it all the time, and we totally devalue your culture and your history and your value as a person.
I know, because there's a moment later on the episode where they're like talking about her, and they're like, oh yeah, actually we kind of dug up her grave, and he's like, what? And they're like, no, what?
Yeah, they're like, we
just
didn't
move
tell
past
you.
It. It's not a big deal. We dug up her unmarked grave. There were no bones in there. Don't even worry about it. We dug up her grave. We said that she was a witch. It's a thing. Everybody knows about this, Ben.
Well, what they say is they say like, we didn't tell you because we thought it would upset you. Right. Like, now you give a shit. Now you give a shit. Okay. Interesting.
So fucking.
This movie. Like, we didn't want to upset you about us removing your grandmother's remains or your great aunt's remains for the sake of our amusement. And he's like, well, I'm upset now. I'm gonna curse the whole fucking town.
And it's so funny the way that they all treat the ghost thing, because like, they basically, there are tourists there because they think a ghost might show up, and they go out to where, to the Puritan town, to Old Pilgrimville, and somebody's like, we've been waiting here for an hour, where the heck is this friggin' ghost? Like, you guys waited for an hour for a ghost and you didn't see anything? I'm so sorry.
If every hour that I went without seeing a ghost, I complained, there would be a lot of complaining. Oh, I admit, I would love to see a ghost, but wouldn't exactly make my way out to a Puritan village in Massachusetts solely for that. Mm-hmm. Probably go for the turkey legs and butter and I guess the Hex Girls show.
Which is so funny, because I thought the whole deal was that they were like a worldwide famous touring band that came to this town for a little bit. No,
they live there.
Yeah, they're local, and one of them, Thorne, her dad, runs like the pharmacy and is selling the t-shirts. Like, mm-hmm. They're gonna go off to big city stardom, hopefully. I mean, one of them fucking saved the entire world by casting a Wiccan spell over a witch, so hopefully that somehow leads
I would hope
to
she
success.
Gets, like, yeah, she must at least get that. Like a mention in the newspaper. They yeah, have to something. Chart at least a little bit.
Well, and that's the really funny thing to me, is that at the end of the movie, they're like, without the ghost or whatever, how are we going to ever bring people back to our town? And it's like, well, there was a literal world-ending threat just now. What the fuck? Like, what? That just happened. I guess you guys didn't get any pictures, but, like, it did happen.
And also, like, people were going when you were making a fake ghost.
Right.
Should probably just do that again. Like,
just make up another. Who else did we kill? It's
like. Yeah, well, the funny thing is that, like, they stop the mayor and the other townspeople from faking the ghost, and they reveal them, and, like, they like, shamefully bring them forward
right.
to be like, oh, you people were faking it, there is no ghost, this is what's actually happening.
Right.
It's not exactly a crime. Like, it's kind of just a dick move to be like, oh, there's a ghost here, we're gonna fake it and make people buy stuff, but they're not really, like, on the list of, like, capitalist abuses of the idea of ghosts, it's kind of on the low end.
I guess, like, defamation against Ravencroft's name, like, he could sue for everything they
That's
have
true.
If he really wanted to, but no, he
That's
wants to
true.
Rule the world with his aunt.
Yeah, his ultimate goal becomes world domination once he realizes that he has spooky warlock powers.
Yeah. So there's one point in this episode, I think that we might have mentioned it earlier, I don't know if this was off mic or during the show, but the mayor is trying to find Shaggy and Scooby, or they're like pursuing him. They're trying to like scope out and see what he's up to.
Yes.
And then he like rounds a corner and he's like, oh yeah, just teens making out in the park. And then it shows Shaggy and Scooby and they're like, Scooby's dressed in drag and they're just making out on a bench. And I'm like,
yes,
this is not the first time this has happened. They had these costumes on hand.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I was about to bring up, is the fact that they did not have any hesitation between when the mayor was coming their way and when they needed to hide. It was immediately, let's put on our outfits and make out, and that will fool him.
Right, and it's like they're sitting on a bench. They could have hit behind the bench. They could have hit in the bushes. But no, I guess that like Shaggy just has to talk Scooby constantly into doing this. Or even just let him see you. Like, what's the problem? There's not a curfew. You're just out at night. It's fine.
Yeah, I think they were spying on him and he was plotting to do more shitty ghost business. And that's why they hid. But also like, oh, hi, Scooby and Shaggy. You guys are in this town at night. That's pretty regular.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah, we invited you here. We bought you 50 fucking meals at the diner or whatever. It's fine that you're here.
Gee, I don't know, Scoob. I don't think we really have to make out this time.
Do you think it was Scooby's idea or Shaggy's? Because I think it was definitely the human talking the dog into it.
I don't know. I think Scooby's nasty.
Okay. I mean, Scooby does love dressing up. I mean, in the movie, he dresses up like a grandma to get on the plane. There's so much cross-dressing in Scooby-Doo in general. I once compiled a Twitter thread of all of the like cross-dressing or trans moments.
Hell yes. Hell yes.
There's a moment in Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed where Shaggy drinks a potion that turns him into like a buxom babe. And I'm like, this is so stupid. Mm-hmm.
James Gunn getting our money again. Oh my God. I feel like it's Scooby's idea solely for the fact that he really enjoys dressing as a woman and can't reconcile that and looks for any opportunity to do so.
Right.
I think Shaggy's happy to oblige because he's his friend and he wants to support him in any way he can, but he is a little bit weirded out by it. Just in like a, just like either just come out and say you like it or like stop making excuses and we can just do this all the time, or like,
right.
Or like, don't do it. It's fine.
I mean, as far as our human trapped in a dog's body theory goes, I think that just Scooby-Doo being an adult woman trapped in the body of a dog is mortifying. And has a lot to say about our society.
And you think that she's just trying to reclaim that humanity that she lost. Not only her humanity, but her femininity.
It's so weird to me that Velma falls in love with Ben Ravencroft. Because I've always read her as super, 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 super queer.
It specifically says on Scoobypedia that this is the one and only time in Scooby media that Velma has shown like remote attraction to another character. Male or female.
Like in the live action movies, she is all over that guy in the first one. And then the second one, it's like Seth Green. She's so in love with him. She's like, oh my God, it's Seth Green. And it's like, well, why is this happening?
It's like, it's Seth Green. I bet he can do an impression of me. Oh God.
I've headcanoned Velma as a trans lesbian for a really long time. I know that's not something that's actually real, but I don't need to deconfirm it in this way. It feels cruel and intentional.
With like, if there's any way to explain it away, it might be one of those lesbian moments where you see a man who you are like maybe interested in his body of work or like something else he does unrelated to his gender.
She's so in love with his brain.
Exactly. So she's sapiosexual for him.
Oh God!
And what I'm
Velma
saying
would
is,
be,
yeah, if anyone would be out of the gang, Shaggy's an incel.
Oh boy!
No, Shaggy's too cool. If anything, Velma's what she's going through is a lesbian doubt moment. She sees a man that she recognizes is handsome and talented, and is like, I guess I would have a crush on him because of compulsory heterosexuality. And then at the end, she joins forces with Thorn in order to reconcile her lesbianism and say, no, I cast thee out, foul man. And they seal him in the book.
I mean, I think that if anybody in the Mystery Inc. was an incel, by the way, it would be Fred.
It would be Fred. He has
like fake alpha energy. He's always bossing people around, yes. And he's such a shit. I hate Fred. I've always talked about it. I've pitched to myself a hard R-rated Scooby-Doo movie so many times, and in it, Fred is just like this complete like psychopath that's just gonna try and like murder everybody. It's gonna be so good. Don't worry about it.
Oh my god. Okay, cool. I'll erase it from my brain before I go and see it. See, in my ideal Scooby-Doo reboot, Fred is just sort of like, he's the normie that sees all these weird people around him and wants to unite them in a way that makes them all friends. He's like the...
Oh, that's wholesome compared to what I thought of.
See, like, but that's the only way I can read him, is that, like, I just want him to be, like, a wholesome guy, because that's, like, right. The only thing
no. makes him palatable. For me, Fred is just a culture of toxic masculinity. He bosses everybody around. He's the reason that they're doing all of this in the first place. Like, Daphne and Velma are kind of interested in the mysteries, but they really just want to give Shaggy and Scooby a break.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred is like, no, gang, we got to go out and solve mysteries, because I'm setting up the traps right now.
Yeah, and he's like Scooby, Shaggy, I don't care that you're scared shitless and that you're my friends. I want you to go out there and look at that fake monster,
right?
And then maybe I'll feed you.
You guys are the fastest. And it's like, well, fuck off, Fred. Go on a run. Do some cardio.
Yeah, seriously,
dick.
Fred. Fucking hire somebody who wants to work with us. So there is that moment where. And it goes back to sort of like Velma and Fred being annoyed at being called kids. Like Daphne straight up asks Fred, like, why do we always split up together? And he's like, oh, well, gee, Velma, I think you're really cool. And
Hank Hill?
Yeah, I don't know. That's just what he sounds like to me. That's just how he gets across.
Sure.
But he's just like, I don't know. He's like, I don't know, Daphne. I just wanted to tell you that I, and then he gets cut off and it's like, What is the goal with this? Like, what's the goal with, like, them being annoyed at being called kids? And, like I guess it's just them trying to subvert the formula further and be like, oh, we're going to acknowledge that Daphne and Fred have a relationship, but then they don't.
Yeah, and it's so weird because he's so horny for the Hex girls. And it's like...
He is.
And then Daphne's mad at him, and it's like, you guys aren't dating, so what is this? What is happening?
It's like, are you mad at him because you are interested in him, or are you mad at him because he's, like, ogling women so feverishly?
Oh, just that she's mad that he's just such a pig?
Yeah, that he's just, like, a dick, and he's just, like, a boy, eco-goths.
Oh, man. I love that the ending of this movie is literally just, like, what if Stephen King was an evil wizard? Like,
yeah. As, like, a metaphor for Stephen King / H.P. Lovecraft, Ben falls so far by the wayside at the end. Like, he stays there at the beginning because he's, like, a little bit crotchety. He's into something strange. He has a dark past that has influenced his works. And then at the end, he's just straight up an evil warlock man that, like, wants to take over the world.
I love to think about, like, the all the articles the next day, like, where you, like, open up the paper and you're like, Stephen King turned into a warlock and released a witch and tried to take over the world and then was defeated by a teenage rock star eco-goth.
He was defeated by Billie Eilish.
Yeah. It's like, Stephen King, Billie Eilish, face off in Town Square. It's like, well, what? It's like, so funny. And it's like, oh, the world was almost destroyed and the military was nowhere to be found. What happened?
Yeah. The headline would definitely be Stephen King gets booked forever.
Oh, that was the shittiest thing about this was at the end when Ben gets dragged into the book into eternal damnation. Velma has some bullshit thing that she says, like some quippy bullshit.
Some like quirky like pun about how like this boy is trapped inside of a book forever and like... We just spent an entire hour talking about how that sucks, to like eternally damn someone because you think that they're evil.
That motherfucker's coming back. They're going to make Witch's Ghost Returns after, right? Because like Return to Zombie Island is out now.
Wait, that exists?
Yeah. Yeah, they made Return to Zombie Island this year. It just came out this month, I think.
Excuse me?
Yeah, well, I guess you got some shit to go check out, huh?
Yeah, seriously, I'm already staying up so late. I guess I'm fucking, like, I'm in it for the long haul. Yeah, it sure exists. Okay, what is with the animation?
Is it bad?
Why does Fred has some really weird cheekbones going on in it.
Oh, it's like Mystery Inc. style animation, it looks like. No, I'm looking at what you're looking at. His cheekbones are fucked. Okay.
Maybe he's like mid-zombie transformation. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with him.
Well, it's so funny with Scooby-Doo too, because right now the one that's ongoing is Scooby-Doo and Guess Who, which mm-hmm. is like a weird like 60s throwback. And it's like they keep on revamping. Like they were like, oh, Mystery Inc. will be really, really serious and very serialized. And like every episode will follow after the last one. You have to watch all of them to know what's going on. And after that, Be Cool Scooby-Doo is silly and fun and goofy. And there's no like ongoing character arc really. And after that, they were like, people kind of got mad at us for that. So let's do like a 60s throwback one.
I'm interesting for when we reach the point of the Scooby singularity, when we will inevitably see multiple Scooby-Doo serializations running at the same time, competing for airtime against each other.
Oh, I thought you were about to say like a Spider-Verse situation.
Oh, now that would be good. Now that would be fantastic. We've had like tells of that where What's New Scooby-Doo actually flashbacked to a pup named Scooby-Doo at one point. Like they used the pup named Scooby-Doo animation style for a flashback.
That's great.
And like, I just want more of that as well. Like, not only do I want there to be multiple concurrent Scooby-Doo series running at the same time, a la Big Bang Theory and Young Sheldon, I also just want, like, every single one to cross over with each other in, like, the most cataclysmic Infinity War ass event
right.
ever to occur in the Scooby-Verse. Enter the Scooby-Verse.
I just want it to be gay, honestly. That's the only thing that they could do with yeah. Scooby-Doo at this point that would really get me there.
As sort of like a self-exercise, I did doodle what I imagined my a Scooby-Doo reboot would be like.
Oh, I thought you were about to say your Scooby-Sona.
My Scooby-Sona would pretty much just look like how Scooby-Doo's mom looked in one of those, one of the many like different iterations where it was pretty much just like Scooby with like a bob wig mm-hmm. that would and like eyelashes. That would be me. Mm-hmm. That's my Scooby Sona. My Scooby-Doo like reiteration, I wanted to explore them all like being like between the Mystery Inc. teenaged and the pup named Scooby-Doo kid age, just in like a I don't know. I think we have enough resources as a human race to convey every single year in the Mystery Inc. gang's life. So I think eventually I'll do that series, and then like we'll get someone else to do like the really old series where like Scooby and Co. are like in their aged years, and then we'll like get someone old to do like a middle-aged one. Yeah.
Right.
And then someone to do like kind of like a late 50s, early 60s one where they're not quite like old, like old yet, but they're still like feeling it.
Right.
And then eventually we'll just have like an entire 50 plus years of Scooby-Doo to go through in an entire sitting and just know the entire lives of all of the characters.
Yeah, and it'll all fit within the same chronology somehow.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And we'll just connect it all with Enter the Scooby-Verse.
Right. Well, that'll be great. And also great, Scooby-Doo and the Witch's Ghost.
Yeah, I guess we talked about that movie. No, we did. The thing about it that interests me the most, though, is Ben, which we covered very, very carefully, because like he has the most intense moments. He has the most like sympathetic storyline. And the Mystery Inc. gang is kind of just there in the way they always have been.
I mean, I would say that the eco-goths that are in like a punk rock girl band that are about to be world famous are pretty. If I was going to be anybody,
those are
it'd be Thorn.
Arguably the most... the best parts of the film are the Hex Girls parts, but they're also the most like you know Scooby-Doo characters, and then immediately after that you know the Hex Girls, and then after that I guess you know like the Ghoul School Girls, like
right
in terms of like Scooby-Doo iconography, and then Scrappy-Doo is like right after that, I guess. No, he's probably up above the Ghoul School Girls, but still. Yes, they are the most interesting and coolest part, but like to me the most interesting part to examine is Ben and like his like strange character arc, and also just the way the movie handles everything
right
about it, and like everything about like mystery solving and like plotting. It's a tale for the times.
Yeah, this is a really fun one. I feel like when I watch Zombie Island again, I'll probably like that one more. And Cyber Chase is very, very close to my heart. Like, that's my favorite of these.
That's interesting.
Four. Alien Invaders, by the way, just came to my mind. I do remember that one, but
yes,
I don't remember anything about it.
So. I like that Cyber Chase is your favorite. I would love to hear more about that someday.
Oh, I just loved to imagine that I could play that video game they were playing. I loved it. But also,
that kind of was an Enter the Scoobyverse when you think about it, because they got to meet their old selves.
Yeah, yeah, and that was really fantastic. Also, I did an episode about that way back, like before I came out with my friend from Sans Pants Jackson. So,
oh shit,
it's good. And also, by the way, to people who listen to this show, the episodes from before I started transitioning, pretty good. They make me uncomfortable, but I still think they're funny.
Oh, well, that's good. I think that's good. I don't have any media out there anymore.
Right. No, I recorded like 400 hours of myself talking on microphones about cartoons, so that's not going anywhere.
That is insane. Scooby-Doo, it's good.
Casey, thank you so much for joining me this week.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Mia.
Where can people find you online?
I can be found at Vanilla Vile on Twitter. I'm also Vanilla Vile on YouTube, as well as Patreon, Instagram, just about any general social media thing you can find me on. It will be under Vanilla Vile, which is vanilla like the flavor, and Vile, V-I-A-L, like the tube.
V-I-L-E.
Yes, no, not like vile, but like vile, a vial of vanilla.
Vanilla Vile is your hex girl's name.
Yes, exactly. Yes, it's my eco goth name. You can also find my webcomic, Freddy Freaky, which is inspired a little bit by the mystery solving in early Scooby-Doo, just because it has like monsters and ghosts and people to find.
Right.
But you can find that at freddyfreaky.com, and that's Freddy, F-R-E-D-D-I-E, Freaky, F-R-E-A-K-I-E.com. Thank you for having me, Mia. I have always wanted to be on a podcast, and it is great that I am sharing my first experience with it with you.
I thought you were about to say I've always wanted to be on Cynical Cartoons, and I was like, that doesn't seem possible. Thank you to everyone out there for listening to Cynical Cartoons for another week. And as always, I'm your host, Mia Marchant, and I'm here if you need to talk.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.